Eat Drink Indie Radio is powered by eatdrinkindie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat drink indie. Welcome to Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI HD 2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. We are settling into the new year here on Eat Drink Indie Radio, getting used to the idea of it being 2017, and I'm excited about some new segments we'll be launching over the next few weeks. This week, we have the first installment of an ongoing series called The Recipe Box Project. Inspired by my mom's overflowing recipe boxes that are now mine, that are filled with recipes jotted down on cocktail napkins and notebook paper and on backs of envelopes, we're launching The Recipe Box Project, a segment where we'll be cooking here on the radio and talking about family recipes. The segments will be recorded at the historic Indianapolis City Market, where we can cook and talk with chefs, home cooks, those in all parts of Indy's food and drink community. I want to hear about their family recipes, the dishes they grew up with, the foods they remember, and the flavors that make them think of home. We're launching the Recipe Box Project today with Chef Tom England of Ivy Tech Community College here in Indianapolis. We cooked downtown at the Indianapolis City Market Demo Kitchen recently, and he prepares a chicken and noodle dish that his mom has always made for him. Also today, we talk barbecue with Chris Morrison of Black Metal Barbecue in Indianapolis. He tells us about starting his barbecue business, launching an Indiegogo campaign to raise funds, and getting hooked on competing. He also has a few practical tips for those of us who are outdoors barbecuing all winter long. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Well, I have to say that I'm excited about this week's Eat Drink Indie Radio because we're launching a new segment, the Recipe Box Project. Now, we cook here on the radio all the time. For our Cook This Challenge, we've gone into restaurant kitchens to find out how chefs would create a dish with a surprise ingredient based on what they have on hand. Kind of like what we do when we look in the refrigerator and have to come up with something for dinner, right? But the Recipe Box Project was inspired by the actual recipe boxes from my mom. There's three of them, and they're overflowing with recipes. Some on cards, some clipped from newspapers and magazines, some jotted down on the backs of cocktail napkins. There are so many, and I got to wondering about everyone else's family recipes. Favorite dishes, things that mom or dad or grandma made. The dishes that remind you of home and family. So that's what we'll be cooking up for our recipe box segment. I'll be talking with people as they cook a favorite recipe in the demo kitchen at the historic Indianapolis City Market. And we start today with Chef Tom England of Ivy Tech Community College and a chicken and noodles dish that his mom called Popeye.
So this is a family recipe that my mom made and actually her grandmother made. So it's been at least four generations it's been passed down.
Oh my goodness, I love that.
It's called Popeye and I always knew it as Popeye. And I just thought my mom made up this name.
Well, it seems like something a mom would make up,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. But in classes a couple of years ago, I was talking about it, and one of the students said, oh, no, we make Popeye. And so we started looking this up, and there's all kinds of recipes that are very similar to this called Popeye.
But what is it, though?
So it's chicken and noodles, basically. But,
oh, my gosh.
The noodles special cut, and no matter who calls it Popeye, the noodles are always cut in the square shape.
Okay.
And they're thicker than normal. But the stocks are sometimes a little bit different, and it looks like it comes from a German background, German heritage.
Yeah, okay, I can see that.
Indiana, I mean, there's definitely enough of people around to do that, to bring that heritage to it.
So how does it start?
So I'm going to start making a little stock here.
Uh-huh.
In the absence of a peeler, I'm peeling my potato
okay.
with a knife here. My mom, of course, would do this in her hand.
Oh, right, with the little paring knife, right?
It always scares me to death.
I know, my mom always used a paring knife, and one time she was peeling potatoes at my house, and I handed her a potato peeler. She said, can I just have a little knife?
Yeah, exactly. That's my mom, who actually has been a professional chef all of my life, but she still peels
goodness.
Those potatoes with a paring knife in her hand. Yeah.
So you're going to start with a stock, right?
Yeah, but, this is a recipe that middle-class families would do, or right. You know, they have to make that meal stretch.
Right. Right. Oh, exactly. So yeah. this is a regular family recipe.
Absolutely. So the thickener here is potatoes.
Okay.
And so as she made the stock, she would chop up potatoes in here.
Right.
And in the stock, the potatoes would actually boil.
Right.
Which gives it this great, like, mealy type of texture in it as well.
Right. So she's not, you know, making a roux and thickening right. it with flour or cornstarch or anything.
Yeah, and you know, there's noodles going in there, too.
Well, no, that's
and we'll
right.
talk more about that, but okay. there's some flour in there as well.
Really?
So
okay.
she put the potatoes in there, onions, and then half stock, half water.
Okay, to cook the potatoes.
To cook everything, yeah. So we're going
right.
to also put in here pork and chicken.
So you're going to end up with a really killer stock.
Exactly. Yeah, we're making this broth. It's really intense.
Yeah.
That is going to, you know, carry the flavor of the noodles.
And it's going to smell great. I mean, that's what I'm anticipating is
yeah.
the smell of this.
We were talking, so we've got some already simmering in the background.
Right, I know.
Oh, yeah, it's making me hungry.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to put a half a chicken in here, too.
Okay.
Half a chicken, because you can use the other half a chicken for another meal later in the week.
Of course,
right?
Because you know, this is family cooking.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And then about a half a pound of pork.
Okay.
And I'm just going to slice this up into, you know, slices that when it's cooked, it's just going to fall apart.
Oh, it will. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
So I'm going to put all that in there.
Oh, my gosh.
And then just let that simmer.
Uh-huh.
And so this will be simmering at the house all day. So, it would be 6 hours of just the smell in the house.
Exactly.
The first cold day of the year. Is when she would do it first, right?
See, that's beautiful right now because you know
the doors are closed. I could still now see the moisture on the windows.
Steamed up, steamed up kitchen
smell.
Windows.
Yeah,
how cool is that?
Yeah.
Well, all right. So,
now, well, that's
what's
simmering.
Next? Okay.
She would make the noodles. So
okay, so you're going to make these noodles from scratch, exactly, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Now, I think that's something that maybe could intimidate people. You know, making noodles from scratch.
There's only two ingredients in noodles.
I know, I think it sounds more complicated than it really is.
It does. It does sound more complicated for sure. So we're just going to take the flour and eggs.
Okay.
I was talking to my mom last night as I was preparing for this.
Oh, see, that's great.
And, you know, she's so excited that we're doing this. And then she tells me a few things that she's never told me before. So she's giving me this recipe
so many times.
Oh, so
you got some secrets about this recipe.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, like all good, I think, family recipes, there's always one or two things that aren't written down.
Yeah, and I never know if that's on purpose.
Yes.
Because that way, if I give you my recipe, here's most of the recipe, but maybe
right.
not that little
flavor.
Secret ingredient there.
Well, her secret ingredient is she always put poultry seasoning in with the flour when she made the noodles.
So the noodles are seasoned.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was the thing she told me last night is like, oh, by the way, there was always poultry seasoning.
I love that.
You know, there were some things that were a little bit different every time she made it, but it always had poultry seasoning.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
So,
I can see how that, you know, then people, yes, they're tasting it and be like, oh, man, these noodles really absorbed a lot of that flavor.
Exactly.
You know? and it's poultry seasoning. That's fabulous.
I've eaten this recipe with a lot of chefs. So every
right?
time I go home, she has to make it.
Oh, still?
It's required. Yes, absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I'll bring back, and she'll make a big batch, and I'll bring back leftovers. And lots of chefs have tried this, and we were, like, trying to detail, like, all the stuff that's in there to try to duplicate it. I've never been able to exactly duplicate it. And I don't know if it's because, you know, you're not running in and out of the house and smelling that smell. And
well, that's right.
As she made these noodles, too, she would put newspaper down on the table, right?
Okay.
And then spread these noodles out on them for them to dry. I don't know why. But
to dry the noodles, absorb
maybe.
Moisture? I don't know, keep down the mess?
To keep the wood from the table from getting bad?
Right?
I don't know.
So what do you got in here?
We've got flour in here. So I've got 2 cups of flour,
okay.
The poultry seasoning.
Poultry seasoning.
A little bit of garlic seasoning too, actually.
Okay.
I love garlic, so.
Well, why not, right?
And then I'm breaking eggs into here. So the amount of eggs depends on how much humidity there is, so the flour is going to absorb more or less based on how much it already has in it. So it's just kind of a feel thing. It shouldn't be sticky at all when it's all mixed,
right?
And I'm just doing this all by hand. It's kind of going to get mealy. It'll look like I don't know, little marbles
right.
after a minute or two here, and that's the kind of look we're looking for. I'm not really like digging at it.
So this is not, you're not squeezing it together.
No, not at this point, right. Right. I'm just trying to moisten everything up here.
Now, you know, people might think that it looks like it's not going to come together.
Correct. Yeah, so if you see that now, that's the kind of moisture that I'm looking for.
Okay.
And this is when I'm going to start putting it all together.
All right.
May need just a little bit more.
But see, it's by feel, right?
It is, absolutely by feel. But so, if it's tacky, you know you need to add more. If it's not coming together, you know you need to, if it's not sticking together, you need to add more. If it's too sticky, you need to add flour.
Right.
So I'm going to add a white here.
Okay.
And save that yolk to see if we need more.
Now this is one of those things that as you make it, you know what it's supposed to feel like.
Right.
You know, and I think that that's what
scares people
because yeah. that's what your mom or you know whoever was cooking in a family, it's what they did. They did it often enough so they could tell what it felt like. You know,
It's coming together now. So you can see I'm squeezing this.
All right,
it's all stuck together.
It's starting to look like what you might think of a noodle batter.
Yeah,
it's, dough,
this is exactly the same noodle batter that I would make at any pasta.
Okay,
right.
Okay, right.
Can you hand me the flour?
Absolutely.
Did I already grab it? Yep. Perfect.
Here we go.
So I'm going to flour the tabletop, and I'm just going to roll it here on the tabletop.
Okay. I love the rolling pin. Now, that's a serious rolling pin. One.
So I went to Italy and studied pasta making.
Oh, how cool is that?
First day I'm there. So we start out. It's called the Italian Culinary Institute for Foreigners. And uh-huh. We start out in this castle that was built in 1492.
So you're making pasta in a castle one thing.
Yeah.
Which is very cool.
With a chef, and the chef throws this pasta together real quick. And I've been in the industry. I mean, this was 8 years ago. So I've been in it, you know, 20, 30 years at this point.
Right.
And so I ask, you know, is this your standard pasta dough recipe? And he looks at me like, what do you mean? He says, no, we make pasta different every time we make it a different sauce.
Really?
And so that started making me realize, you know, this is just a blank canvas for you to create what your sauce is going to be.
So you can add that. So right. Mm-hmm. So you can add those things and make it different.
I'm going to take that yolk back.
Okay.
The whole idea of adding that garlic powder and the poultry seasoning would be typical. Uh-huh. I mean, it's something to add a little bit more flavor to it.
Exactly.
But yeah, he said, you know, sometimes I use all egg yolk. Sometimes I use whites. Sometimes I add chicken stock to it instead of water to it. And, you know, it's that whole idea of this is just something you can play with. You can do different things. So to be scared of it is something that shouldn't happen because you can play. This is just something to play with.
Because it isn't a complicated thing, right?
Correct. Yeah. I like Three Wise Men, right? If you go in there and take kids, they ask you if they want to bring out some pizza dough for the kids to play with.
Sure.
You know, it's the same thing. I mean, start playing with your dough and you know, seeing what you could do with it.
Well, and by doing that, you get comfortable with how it feels.
Exactly. Exactly.
So kind of a muscle memory thing.
Yeah. On that trip also, went into Tuscany and was studying at another castle. It was built in 7 AD.
This is a great trip.
Yeah, it's a fabulous trip. And so we've been, you know, talking with all these Italians and their history and stuff, and this little old lady comes out, is going to start the class, and she is like that big, but her forearms are that big.
Oh my goodness, she's been doing that. Yeah. She's been pressing dough out like that.
Yeah. But it was a 70-year-old Scottish lady who taught us to make pasta in Tuscany.
That's
awesome.
She
lived there for so long, and yeah, it was great. All right, so this is kind of worked together.
Right.
The other thing is, she would always roll it right away.
Okay.
And, you know, when I make pasta, I let it rest for about an hour so the gluten's come back together. But if you roll it right away, the dough gets a little bit tougher. And
okay.
And so the noodle will have more of a bite at the end.
Oh, sure.
So,
now, see, it is going to be a little harder to roll out right away.
Yeah, it's going to retract.
It's going to come back every time you push it out.
Yep, absolutely. But I'm going to roll this down to about a quarter of an inch thick, which is really thick for dough.
Yeah.
Usually with a noodle dough, I'm going, you know, an eighth
really,
of an
really
inch.
Thin.
Yeah, so I can read through it. In this case, I definitely do not want to read through it.
Because this is going to be a hearty, really hearty noodle. I mean,
it's a meal. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so this isn't going to be a what you'd think of as a pasta. you know.
Right, yeah, you know. We definitely would think of it as Popeye. It was totally different from...
I love that Popeye. I want to know where that word comes from, where the name of the recipe comes from.
You know, doing a little bit of research, they were... A lot of conjecture that it came from pot pie.
Oh, okay.
So with the New England tradition of pot pies.
Okay, I could kind of see that.
And using the same dough that they would have done.
This is a pot pie sort of hearty filling.
It would be the same filling, really, for a lot of pot pies.
I could see that.
Yeah.
So the dough is spreading out now. You're getting it to kind of where you want it to be.
And then as it gets to the size that I want it, or the thickness I want it, I'll cut it into 1-inch squares.
Okay.
Rugged. So you want... Yeah. And pizza cutter works fine.
Uh-huh.
If you have a pizza cutter.
Okay.
You know, she was never very specific about, you know,
so this is a rustic recipe. This isn't, absolutely. Don't have to be exacting, right?
Right. So once these were
cut. Oh, that's beautiful. Right.
They were on paper, newspaper.
Your newspapers, right?
And covered with flour. I mean, covered. It looked like a little snow scene at times.
Oh, that's great.
And, you know, we were talking about thickening the soup.
Right.
That was part of the thickener, and I never really
realized.
Obviously, it helps it from sticking together at this point. But when she put them in, she never really dumped all that extra flour off.
Oh, she just picked them up and popped them in.
And throw them in the boiling water.
All right.
And that's really where we ended up with our additional thickening power to it.
Right. Okay. I guess so.
So let's transition by means of TV.
We've got
some finished product there.
Okay.
So these noodles end up looking like this. And again, they would set all day on this newspaper and dry out somewhere.
Okay, so you have your finished noodles.
Finished noodles, and I'm going to bring up some of the finished stock, and we'll...
Okay, and we'll go from there.
Together, yeah.
We've been talking with Chef Tom England for the Recipe Box Project in the demo kitchen at the historic Indianapolis City Market. Stay with us as we finish up his recipe here on Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. We are back here on Eat Drink Indie Radio with the first installment of our new Recipe Box project. We're cooking in the demo kitchen of the historic Indianapolis City Market with Chef Tom England of Ivy Tech Community College. Chef Tom is talking us through how he makes his mom's chicken and noodle dish that she called Popeye. And as we find out, sometimes there are secret ingredients involved in family recipes. And we also find out just how good it tastes.
So, you know, food can really... really does a lot for that welcoming kind of feeling. And I think that's what we all want from a recipe. And when we're cooking for friends or family, you know, you want them to feel welcome and loved,
yeah,
you know?
This is love.
It is,
this
right?
This is love, yeah. That's that definition of comfort food, right?
Yeah.
The stuff that makes you feel like you're loved and hugged, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that she's making it for you,
right?
You know, because she knows you like it. And it makes her feel good to make it for you, so...
Yeah.
See, that's the beauty of cooking, and that's why I like it when people are so interested in it. So, you know, maybe, you know, it'll encourage people to give it a try, right? A recipe like this, which isn't that complicated.
No, it's not. And if you think about it, we've got, eight ingredients in here.
Oh, that's not
it.
So bad,
no,
right?
No, it's not bad at all. And I'm not doing any major cutting or anything. There's no
intimidating technique.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah, super easy. So we've got this back on a simmer if you want to turn that back on.
Sure.
Well, really up to a boil at this point.
All right.
When it gets up to a boil, we're going to start dropping our noodles in there and mixing those noodles in there. Again, something more than what I would do making normal pasta because I'm actually mixing and getting all that stuff in there as I'm putting it in.
Right.
Normally, I'd worry about those noodles falling apart and, you know.
These aren't going to fall apart, though, because these are sturdy noodles.
They're sturdy
noodles.
This is great. Yeah, absolutely. And I want that flour to come off of them and thicken the stock.
Exactly, like you mentioned earlier. Right?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to really work that as we put it in there. Again, wash my hands here.
All right.
This really does. That smell is like perfect. And
it is, isn't it?
Yeah. So all those times I've tried to duplicate this before, the smell has never been right. The smell is right today. So, you know, I've got high hopes here.
I think it's that extra little information from mom, right?
The poultry seasoning of all things. You know, that was the other thing. When we were running in and out house as kids,
right?
We were grabbing these noodles and eating them.
Yeah.
Right? Now we kind of freak out about raw eggs. But they always tasted good. And as a kid, I thought it was just flour and eggs. But now I know it had other stuff in it.
No wonder, right?
So, you know, as this comes up to a boil, we've got little chunks of potatoes in there.
Now, that's right. That's the potatoes that you put in earlier.
Right. So, you know, as that simmers all day, they fall apart.
Right.
So the starches are coming out of there. It's starting to thicken up a little bit from the simmering process.
Sure.
And so we've got some thickening that's already happened, and now we're going to add these noodles. And she would always add them by the handful and just kind of drop them in there and you know, kind of swirl it as it goes. Look at all the steam coming out.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, this is going to be great. I mean, you can tell already. But now, how long did the noodles cook?
About 12 minutes.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, they're a thick dough.
Right.
But they're not a dried noodle. They're, you know,
sure,
pretty wet still.
Sure, because fresh, because you just made, right?
So normally, if I was to cook a fresh noodle, it'd take 2 minutes.
Sure.
So we're still going to cook a little bit longer.
Okay.
Let some of that flour cook out of it. And let the middle of the noodle cook.
What a homey dish.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm just looking at this thinking, wow, that's thick, heavy. And, you know, this is several meals. I mean,
it is. Okay, right. So you have your first meal of it. And even if you know, if you eat up all the noodles, but then you still have broth and you can turn it into something else.
And it's Indiana, right? So the second time we'd have it, we'd have mashed potatoes and put this on top of it, right?
Of course you would.
Like we do with our chicken noodles.
Exactly.
And again, we've got another meal out of it by stretching it with some other stuff.
Oh, I love this. But now this isn't, I mean, as long as you had the broth made ahead of time, this is something that could come together really easily.
Yeah, and you could really do this with just water. You wouldn't have to use broth.
Right.
Mom said that she would sometimes add a couple bouillon cubes.
Well, you know, just in case, you know.
And, you know, most chefs will be scared to death to say that they use any bouillon or any of that stuff. But in reality, I mean, as long as you're using it as an additive and not as the sole background behind what you're doing, you know, it adds a little bit of sweetness. It adds a little bit of salt. It adds a little
flavor,
umami.
Just a little bit in case you need that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And see, that's the thing. Sometimes you do. You know, sometimes recipes, you know, aren't coming out just like you want them, so you have to add a little bit to them.
Yeah.
But people shouldn't be afraid to do that,
to,
you know, pump up the flavor,
you
know, if their broth isn't just like they want it.
Right. Anthony Bourdain's book, The Kitchen Confidential, you know, he talks about in soup stocks class in his CIA days when he went to school, he would sneak in little packets of bouillon and add it to the stock, and the instructor would just rave about how good it was.
Oh, my gosh, your stock
Come
is
on.
Fabulous.
Yeah, of course we're doing it sometimes.
But there's nothing wrong with that. There's not rules. You're not breaking a rule to pump up your flavor or add a little more seasoning.
Yeah.
You don't have to follow the recipe just exactly.
And Mom's like, well, yeah, no, I never really had an exact recipe I followed. So, you know, of course. I mean, it's just people cooking at home. I mean, I look in the refrigerator and see that I have a little bit of pork and a little bit of chicken. Let's make some noodles. So.
You know, so that's the thing that I hope to get across to people, that it isn't hard.
No.
It doesn't need to be intimidating. There's no time clock.
Right.
No one's judging you.
Right. I mean, she was at home. She was working.
Sure.
And this would be something she would do on Saturday morning or Monday morning. And go off and do laundry and do the house cleaning and everything else and be able to just kind of let it set all day.
Oh.
Just kind of have to watch the dog from getting the noodles, too.
Well, but, and the kids running through the house, right?
Yes. Yeah, well, the dogs are a little bit more sneaky. I don't know if the dogs are more sneaky or the kids are more sneaky stealing those noodles, but yeah, for sure.
But it's looking terrific now. So it's boiling. I mean, gently boiling,
Gently boiling, And actually, I'm going to let this come up to full boil.
Okay.
And just kind of let it set for a minute.
So this has come together very easily.
I mean, we've got a gallon and a half of stock here, soup here at this point. I mean, and it's thickening up.
So this is feed a family food.
It is feed a family food. That's nice. When you have, you know, the sleepover and, you know, six kids are in there watching TV or
if it's snowing, I can just imagine, you know, steaming up the windows. It's snowing. You got a fire in the fireplace
on
a weekend, you know.
Yeah, for sure. That's what it's all about.
So I love this.
I love this.
Any advice for people on creating a nice stock? You know, because if they want to take the time, you know, to start with this, to make a nice stock, you know, what could they do?
So, you know, first part is make sure you have good bones and good water. I mean, that's the foundation.
I was
the
just
most
reading
important
about that the other day. Is this the water is the basis of your soup or your stock? And so, what do you mean?
Yeah.
So, what do you mean when you say have good water?
So, water that has been purified of some of those things that we have in hard water, right?
Well, you know, as a city water, sometimes you know it starts. It smells like chemicals, maybe a little chlorine in the background.
Exactly.
I'm smelling something else, maybe. You know, so.
So it's good to put it through a Brita filter or put it through some type of easy filtration system.
Uh-huh.
But we don't want to do reverse osmosis.
Oh,
reverse
tell
osmosis
me why.
Actually cleans everything out of it.
All
so
right.
the way the flavors get stuck to the water molecules is because there's other things stuck to those molecules.
Right.
But if there's nothing else on those water molecules, nothing else will stick to it.
So your stock won't come together maybe as it might otherwise.
Right. So you're not going to have the aromas that you want. It's like, kind of like putting a silicone coating on the water molecules. Nothing sticks to it.
Oh my gosh, that's fascinating.
So reverse osmosis is not a good thing for making stocks.
All right.
But it's a, you know, I want it down to like the Brita level.
Okay,
I have some stuff.
Just filtered water, right?
Filtered water, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And then you want bones that have connective tissue on them.
You know, like wings and legs and things
wings,
like that.
Legs, necks, feet. Feet are awesome. I think it's some chicken feet.
I love that.
Yeah.
Feet are awesome.
Yeah.
No, but that's something you can buy. I mean, you can go to the specialty markets, right?
Most international markets have chicken feet.
Right.
And necks. So if you can get those two things, throw some thighs in there.
Chicken thighs. Wonderful stuff.
Add a little bit more flavor and,
and
let it go. Simmer it at a low temperature.
As you're making the stock.
As you're making the stock, yeah. I'm going to turn this down now, too.
Uh-huh.
And let it go. I mean, literally, when I make the stocks, I put it on in the evening.
Okay.
And wake up the next morning and take it off.
Oh, my gosh.
Just on the lowest level,
So it's just been sitting there kind of steaming.
Let it go all night, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And, of course,
the house smells good,
The house smells good. But the best thing is, at that low level, that connective tissue melts, and it becomes gelatin. And so it adds that comforting mouthfeel to it.
It's thick and smooth and silky and wonderful.
And so healthy for you, too, actually.
Right.
So these are ready.
Oh, my gosh.
We've got, you know, the thickened noodle, and if this simmers a little bit more, the stock will definitely get thicker.
Okay.
We should give it a try.
Oh, my gosh. This smells so good.
Yeah, this would definitely thicken up quite a bit.
Oh, my goodness. That's beautiful.
It's so ingrained into people, some of those family recipes, that you have to, like, keep them secret, right? And,
you know, I think so.
Yeah. In catering, a lot of times people will say, oh, I want you to make my aunt, you know, whatever's special recipe. And I'm always like, I will never be able to duplicate that. I cannot duplicate how she cooked, what her stove was like, and all that other stuff. And, you know, I've tried to duplicate mom's recipe here for years and years, and I still can't do it. Part of it is the love, you know, that love in that kitchen.
And
so, yeah, she's phenomenal to be in the kitchen with because, you know, she really loved what she was doing and does love what she's doing in the kitchen. It's a great experience growing up with her and going back and cooking now and seeing her cook with my nieces now. So I've got three little nieces and still get in the kitchen and cook with them all. So it's fun.
I think that's great.
So this is delicious.
Thank you.
And
I handed it to you, I thought, oh my gosh, I didn't taste it. And that's one of the chef rules is you got to taste food before you serve it.
Magnificent. So like you were saying earlier with the noodles, it's sort of a canvas that you can open up.
Yeah.
If you wanted to try something other than pork and chicken, what would you suggest to try to kind of experiment with the proteins?
Oh, that's a great question. And, you know, as I said, mom would open up the kitchen and see what was in there.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, you could even, you know, just kind of play around with any of the different meats for sure.
Beef and noodles, of course,
beef
right?
Beef and noodles, yeah, very typical. And, you know, pork doesn't have to be in there. I think it adds a certain flavor to this, and a lot of the recipes I look at, yeah, for sure. So just experimenting. You could do a vegetarian version of this pretty easily.
You could make a nice vegetable broth, which is a wonderful thing too, just different.
Yeah, and if you roast off some of those vegetables beforehand to give it some more of that richness and
a little sweetness, richness, absolutely.
Yeah, and not textured vegetable protein, but what's the powder? Nutritional yeast. Add some nutritional yeast to it, and it would be a very, very much similar.
You could get a very savory dish and still have a vegetarian dish.
Yeah, for sure. Should we try it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. As a matter of fact, I've already had a bite.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, my gosh. Mm. Oh, it's so rich.
Yeah, it is.
Filling.
Mm. I love these noodles as it falls apart.
See, that's a taste of home right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's, you can't underestimate how wonderful that is, you know, to, you know, kind of try to recapture that, that feel, that flavor, you know, that experience.
We've been talking and cooking today with Chef Tom England of Ivy Tech Community College. For more on his Popeye recipe for chicken and noodles, go to eatdrinkindy.com. True barbecue fans, it doesn't matter what time of year it is. Even in the face of January ice storms, you just know that someone's out there this weekend putting some ribs or brisket on a backyard smoker. And that's just how it started out for Chris Morrison of Black Metal Barbecue in Indianapolis. He became hooked on barbecue, and when he did pretty well in a local competition, well, it became an obsession. He launched a catering business, and Black Metal Barbecue took off. He now has an Indiegogo campaign to raise funds for additional equipment, and you can expect to see him at even more barbecue events this year. I talked with Chris this week to find out how he caught the barbecue bug, what competition has been like so far, and where Black Metal Barbecue is going in the future.
Black Metal Barbecue basically started when I became obsessed with barbecue. I say I'm obsessed and possessed because of the black metal thing. I started probably barbecuing back you know, early 2000s in my backyard when we got our new house, and trying to replicate, you know, some of the ribs I had at restaurants or things like that, you know, failing sometimes, you know, nailing it a little bit, I guess. And then I kept doing it, practicing, and we'd have people over for cookouts, and next thing I know, I didn't even get to taste my ribs. They were all gone.
Oh, my goodness. So you were recreating those tastes that you were going for, maybe, right?
I don't know if I was recreating those tastes. I was making some sort of tastes that were edible, I guess. I don't know. Maybe everybody was just hungry. But, I did that for a while in the backyard, just grilling, like, on a gas grill, trying to make it work with, like, wood chips on the side like I read on the internet.
Oh, man, but gas grill, that's tough, right?
It's not the preferred method to do traditional barbecue, I suppose. But, I kept doing that, and then eventually I got my own backyard pit, which was a Weber Smoky Mountain, one of the smaller ones, and, you know, became obsessed with the barbecue books, the barbecue TV shows, things like that.
So you were watching it and trying to do those kinds of things in your backyard?
Absolutely. I would watch, like, the first season of Barbecue Pit Masters, which is they're following a few competition teams around the circuit, you know, the KCBS competition circuit, and I would try to steal their, like, tips and tricks that they might be showing. You know, they don't really show how the teams are cooking their food. But if you pay attention, you know, like, what's on their table, you know, what sauce is that they're using, what temperature are they doing. So I would try to follow those things. And then I joined the barbecuebrethren.com forum online, which if anybody's looking for barbecue information, that's the site to go to. It's fantastic. And I would read that forum every day, use the search function, and just find answers to anything I needed to try to make my food better. So
So you were kind of obsessed.
I was, and it's only grown from there. I am absolutely obsessed with barbecue.
Well, I think that's something that happens when people get into barbecue. It kind of starts to pervade your life. It becomes maybe a lifestyle.
Absolutely. You know, and that obsession led me to do my first barbecue competition.
Now, when was that? Tell me about that.
Okay, so yeah, that was in 2014, I believe. We did the Franklin Smoke on the Square barbecue competition. We signed up not really knowing what to expect. I mean, I read the rule book. You know, I became a member of the Kansas City Barbecue Society so I could have my number and everything. You know, when we roll up in my truck, the truck bed is just full of crap. It's full of stuff. Like, we didn't really know what we needed to bring. We had my Weber smoker, we had a beat up charcoal grill, and we had my ugly drum smoker that I made out of a 55 gallon drum that was used for honey before that. and it was just homemade, really ugly. It had grass like all over the side of it because I had just mowed my lawn and the grass blew onto the side of it. So what
was that like coming up with your you know kind of backyard stuff with the professional barbecue rig people?
It was extremely intimidating at first because, you know, we rolled up and everybody's in like RVs or they have these big trailers, you know, with their huge smokers on the back of them. And we're like, oh, what are we getting ourselves into? You know, our goal was not come in last place. That was the absolute end goal. But then people started coming up and talking to us. You know, some people walk by and kind of give an eye to our like little smokers and like whatever. But then some people come up and talk to us and be like, "You're new, aren't you?" And we're like,
"Oh, does it show?" Right?
Yeah, exactly. But everybody was so nice, and we just hung out with everybody all night. You know, all day that Friday, all night that Friday. People giving us advice and everything.
It is a nice, a familial kind of group. You know, this whole barbecue culture.
Absolutely, it's. You know, I grew up playing in bands and like the metal music scene, you know, and it's very similar to that, the culture, the community around, you know, music, whatever scene that may or may not be. I'm sure it's the same, but it's very tight, and everybody was just so friendly, shared love, shared interests, and I just fell in love with it even more after that first competition. So.
Oh, so now you knew? Did you know then that there were going to be more of this, more in your future?
Well, we somehow came in fifth place at that competition, and that after that we were absolutely hooked for the competition stuff. So yeah, I knew it was on at that point. Like we couldn't stop.
So how do you go from backyard barbecuing, which a lot of people are familiar with, a lot of smokers, you know, people, you know, have you know, put together things in their backyard. How do you go from that and make the jump to, you know, a little bit more serious stuff?
Well, for me, I felt no other choice. I mean, I had to. I was at the competition. I got bit by the bug, you know, and once you enter like a professional competition, you know, I mean, you're considered a pro and you're not allowed to go back to the backyard division, I guess, is from what.
Oh, no, see, that is all right, because there is a backyard division for the people who maybe are just getting started, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I didn't know about that really when I started.
So you jumped right in.
Jumped right in. So we did more of those, you know, and then people started just like liking the food a whole lot. You know, people would come to the competitions and eat all our leftovers. And then I decided to start a small little business. So I started Black Metal Barbecue and like doing small catering gigs and little pop-up things at breweries and bars, selling stuff like that. And the response was outstanding. So that just grew and grew until like what our plans are right now. So
now tell me a little bit about the name and what your plans are for the business now, right?
Yeah, okay. Black Metal Barbecue, the name comes from basically my love for metal music. And, you know, like I grew up playing metal and punk rock and hardcore and stuff like that. And then it's kind of the antithesis of, you know, the barbecue kitsch and like the funny little pigs, you know, with like their little outfits and like the corny names, which is awesome. Yeah, yeah. Like you go to barbecue competitions and everybody has like these names that are full of puns and it's hilarious. But I kind of wanted to be a little bit different, but we don't take ourselves seriously. I mean, if you look at our logo, it's cheesy in its own way, which we did that on purpose. But it just shows who we are. You know, we're not country boys or anything like that. We were from the city. We like metal music, you know.
Well, now that is a differentiating point, you know, because, you know, a lot of the barbecue teams do have that sort of country boy kind of look about them.
Absolutely, they do, you know, which is awesome. That we got to be who we are. That's not us, you know. So
you're from the city, right?
Yep, born and raised. So, that's where the Black Metal Barbecue comes from. And, you know, right now we have an Indiegogo campaign going. We're taking the business to the next level.
Well, now tell me about that. Tell me how you decided to pursue that kind of funding.
Okay. Well, we raised I saved up and I got some family help. And scraped together every penny from all the pop-up gigs, catering gigs we did, and we were able to purchase a trailer.
How big? What kind?
It is a Southern Dimensions Group trailer from Waycross, Georgia. It is 8.5 feet wide by 20 feet long with a 8-foot barbecue porch on the back where my Shirley Fabrications custom-built smoker will go. See, that's another thing. I already got the smoker that I went down to Tuscaloosa, Alabama to get a couple years ago. So, and that's going to go on the back of this trailer.
20 feet long?
20 feet long, yeah. And that's actually small compared to a lot of the trailers at these competitions and that the big-time barbecue caterers use. So we're going to be tight for space in the kitchen a little bit, but we also live in the city, and it's going to be hard to park that guy. So, But Yeah, so we had most of the funding ready for that. You know, we bought the big parts. We have the smoker. We have the trailer. You know, and so we decided, you know, to start a little crowdfund campaign and give back to some people. We have some awesome perks, you know, parties that are cheap, you know, 15 people for $300. I mean, it's not a bad deal. Plus, you get to give to a good business. So we're doing that to be able to outfit the trailer with a few things that we still need and to pay for our insurance and things like that, to get us rolling without debt. Because so far, we've been able to do this without going into debt, which is great for us because it makes it a pretty low risk, you know, proposition. So that's where we are now.
We've been talking with Chris Morrison of Black Metal Barbecue in Indianapolis. Stay with us for more from Chris, including some advice on perfecting your own barbecue game, here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Doesn't love barbecue. Ribs, chicken, pulled pork, oh, and the brisket. Well, it's easy to see how people become a little, shall we say, obsessed with barbecue perfection. It happened to Indianapolis resident Chris Morrison, and he went pro, launching a successful competition team, Black Metal Barbecue, and a catering business as well. I asked him for some advice for those who might be thinking about competing, and also for a few tips for perfecting your ribs.
The catering part's actually my favorite part of it. We love to take our barbecue to, you know, events and to parties, and have people come around the pit, hang out with us, you know, if we do the on-site catering. It's super fun. Everybody comes around and just wants to know about what we're doing, wants to know about the pit, wants to know about what wood we're using, wants to know how long we cook our brisket. They want to know all that stuff, which is perfectly fine because I want to teach people, you know, I want people to, you know, love barbecue as much as I do, you know. And the catering is also, we're going to be licensed as a food truck, but the catering hopefully will get us through the colder months and we'll add to, you know, the end profit and all that. So
so it's a very sociable scene, barbecue is, don't you think?
Absolutely, and that's one of my favorite things about it, the community aspect, and that's something that I hope to help bring to Indy. I mean, there's some great barbecue restaurants, there's great barbecue people around Indianapolis, but I want to help tie it all together somehow, and I want Black Metal Barbecue to be known as like a place where people want to go spend their Saturday afternoon, hang out around the trailer, or eventually, you know, a small restaurant barbecue shack, you know, drinking beers, hanging out, you know, playing games, whatever, just grabbing a tray of food with a bunch of friends and hanging out, so, you know.
So do you see a lot of interest, clearly, in barbecue, so this doesn't seem like it's too far-fetched. You know, this kind of scenario could happen.
I hope so. But from the response we've had before at our events, you know, the vibe that I want has been there. So I see no reason why we can't, you know, make this happen and bring awesome barbecue to Indy, you know, in addition to what's already here, and bring our, you know, heavy metal party attitude to the scene as well. You know, I really think it can happen. You know, people want it. The response is there. People love barbecue. People love to have fun. That's all we want to do is have fun and serve people awesome barbecue.
So now, if you could offer some advice, because this, you're kind of living the dream for some people. You know, a lot of people probably are out there in their backyards thinking, man, I would love to do this for real. Any advice for people who might be considering that?
Yeah, practice your butt off. Read every book from the barbecue pitmasters out there. You know, there's a ton of great barbecue books. There's a ton of great barbecue videos on YouTube. There's a ton of barbecue shows. Not all of them great or not, but you can learn something from them. But mostly you have to practice, and you have to eat good barbecue, find what you like, and try to learn how to replicate that. You have to become a master of whatever pit you're using. You have to make sure that your fire is burning clean. You have to know when the meat is done. It's maybe not done when you think it's done. And things like that. So
what are some of those things that you might point out to people? You know, like the smoke, the temperature, that kind of thing.
Well, the smoke, for the biggest thing that I've learned is that you need a clean fire. If you have dirty smoke, your barbecue is going to taste bitter. It's just going to be bad.
So what do you mean by dirty smoke?
Dirty smoke means that your fire is not getting enough oxygen. It's basically a smoldering fire that's not clean. It's you need a lot of oxygen to burn a clean fire, and you know you're doing that when you don't have smoke billowing out of it. You want the smokestack to run what they call a thin blue smoke. It's basically, you can barely see it. If you're looking through the smokestack, I mean, you can just see very faint white smoke, you know, coming out. If you see clouds of it coming out, or it's not moving, it's puffing out like a train or something, that's bad. That's not the smoke that you want at all. So,
what about advice on the actual cooking? Are there certain things that are more popular or that might be a good place to start?
As far as cuts of meat? Well, I wouldn't start with a brisket. Brisket's a little challenging to find that sweet spot. So many people say it's the hardest cut of meat to cook, but once you figure it out, it's not hard. Right? You just got to figure out the tenderness point that you're looking for. But, I would start out with pork butts. Pork butts are basically, in my opinion, the easiest thing to cook. You can basically throw them on a smoker, and as long as you're maintaining a clean fire, maintaining a constant temperature, and temperature is pretty irrelevant. You can cook low and slow. You can cook hot and fast. It all comes out fine as long as you pay attention to what you're doing. Throw a pork butt on there, season it up with your favorite rubs, and just cook it until it's tender, you know, regardless of what the internal temperature might be. And then you got to let it rest. Don't forget to let it rest. If you pull it off and then just pull it automatically and start pulling it, shredding it up, it's going to be dry in a minute. So, wrap it up in some towels, throw it in a cooler, let it rest for a few hours, you'll be fine.
Do you have a preference between, ribs, brisket, chicken, because, pork, those, of course, any kind of preferences that you have that it's kind of become a favorite?
I don't eat a ton of barbecue, like, in general, because I cook it all the time and I'm always tasting it. But I will tell you, I will eat brisket all day long, every day. I love brisket. It is my favorite. It's one of my top favorite foods. I don't want to say well done, because some people might misconstrue that. A well-cooked brisket is basically heaven. Like, it is the best thing that I can imagine. Sometimes my partner Jamie Vernon, he does the competitions with me and everything. We'll be sitting there at a competition, we'll slice up our brisket, and we will take a little test sample of it, and we'll just look at each other and just basically die just because it's so good. We can't imagine eating anything better, even if we fail miserably at that competition. Like, that bite right there was worth it. So
what about the flavor profile? I hear a lot about the Midwest having a sweet palate in all sorts of kind of foods. Does that translate to barbecue as well?
Yeah, it does. If you compare Midwestern barbecue, because I would say, Indiana, it's kind of the Kansas City style, the sweet, molasses-y sauce, something like that. If you compare that to, like, Texas barbecue, where it's all just salt and heavy pepper, it's totally different. As far as, like, my preference, I like a mix between, honestly, like, and that's kind of what we're trying to do. It's not sickly sweet barbecue by any means. It's probably a little more spicy than a lot of places around here, but the Midwest definitely has a preference for the sweet and the sticky barbecue. And, that's not – we always serve our sauce on the side. We rarely ever serve anything sauced unless we get a request for that.
Okay, I have to ask, though, what about ribs? People always seem to want to do ribs. Any advice on that, for people that are eyeing that backyard grill and can't wait to get back outside?
Oh, sure, ribs. So, you've got your baby back ribs, and then you have your full-on spare ribs, and then you have your St. Louis cut ribs. So I recommend getting – you can either buy a rack of spare ribs for yourself, and then you can cook them like that. But it's easier if you trim them down to St. Louis style, which means cutting off the breastbone if it's there and cutting off the cartilage tips. Then you can make rib tips out of those, just a little chef snack. So, ribs are fairly easy. Just take them, remove the membrane on the back. Some places don't do it, but I think you should. It turns into weird papery consistency. So peel off the membrane. There's videos on how to do it. Sometimes it can be tough until you get the hang of it. And then, season up both sides with your favorite barbecue rub. Rubs, whatever you want. It's kind of irrelevant, for a backyard cook. Just whatever you like. Throw it on your pit. Whatever that might be, at whatever temperature. My favorite temperature would probably be 275 to 300 degrees. A lot of people go way lower than that, but I feel that 275 renders out the fat of spare ribs and St. Louis ribs a little bit better. So, throw them on for two and a half hours until they get a color that you like. You want a deep red mahogany color at that point. And then what I do at that temperature is kind of a take on the what they call the 3-2-1 method. And that's more for cooking at 225. You do 3 hours out in the smoke, you do 2 hours wrapped up in foil, and then 1 hour back in back on the pit. If you do that at 275, you're going to come up with mush. But put it out in the smoke for a couple hours till it looks good. Then take some heavy duty foil, put your rack of ribs in there, and add some sort of seasoning ingredients. You know, some people put in apple juice, some people put in hot sauce, brown sugar. Some people put butter in there, things like that. Whatever you want. It's open. And then you just wrap them up really tight, throw them back on the pit for an hour or so, wrapped up really tight. And keep the temperature going. You know, at this point, you don't have to add any more smoke to it because it's in foil. It's not getting smoke. And so probably, in an hour and a half, something like that, if it's a meaty rack of ribs. If you're cooking a small rack of ribs, you don't want to go that long. But then take them out of the foil, check their tenderness. You'll know they're tender if you pick them up halfway with a pair of tongs in the middle and they basically bend almost a 90 degree, not quite. Or you can take your fingers and twist some of the bones, and if they start twisting, breaking away from the meat, you're probably pretty close. Or you can take a toothpick and go between the bones and the meat, and if it slides in and out like a knife through warm butter, then they're about there. So at this point, if you want to sauce them, go ahead and throw a light coat of sauce on there, throw them back on the pit and sauce them, and let the sauce set for a little while. Or throw them back on there until they get tender and let the bark firm up a little bit, and as soon as they're tender, like I mentioned, pull them off, let them sit for 20 minutes, slice them up.
We've been talking with Chris Morrison of Black Metal Barbecue in Indianapolis. For more information, look for Black Metal Barbecue on Facebook and check out their fundraising campaign at Indiegogo.com. I'm Jolene Katzenberger, and you've been listening to Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. Thanks so much for tuning into the show, and thanks also to our guests, Chef Tom England of Ivy Tech Community College, who kicked off our Recipe Box project this week, and Chris Morrison of Black Metal Barbecue in Indianapolis. And thanks also to producer John Katzenberger for helping to bring you Eat, Drink, Indie Radio.